This week on Your Western Context, Trudeau's middle-class tax cut provides more wealth for the top 1%, a look at our new federal poll tracker, and a conclusion to the Northern BC murder spree. Also, social media misrepresents a First Nations ceremony to excuse Trudeau's blackface. This is Western Context, episode 137, recorded Saturday, September 28th, 2019. Jerking the knees. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Western Context. We're back yet again this week as we continue on for what feels like the perpetual election campaign since, you know, we've been covering this since, you know, Parliament closed out in June, and it's been ever ongoing ever since then, with stories here and there, upside down, right side up, but nonetheless, we're here to provide all the news to you and hopefully provide some information and context with that.
Yeah, exactly. There's always, in an election campaign, there's always going to be news to talk about, and certainly a lot of bias and sensationalism that we see a lot of the time in the mainstream media that definitely gets thrown around, whether no matter what side of the political spectrum you appear to be on. It seems that you cannot actually get news these days that doesn't have that bias and sensationalism removed, unless, of course, you're listening to us.
That's right. And, you know, we've been doing this since January 2017. And as I mentioned, our whole goal here is to provide all the information and context necessary to put yourselves on the right side of the news. And in doing so, we hope to remove all that media bias and sensationalism that comes with it by talking about stories that weren't talked about or just providing the context that the media does not. So let's begin.
Indeed, let's begin and let's ask ourselves some questions. And are the questions to ask ourselves are you better off now than you were a decade or even two decades ago? Or is our country better off now? Do you have better job prospects? Do you have confidence that your kids have a brighter future? These were all questions that Justin Trudeau asked during the debates in the election campaign of 2015. And Trudeau at the time promised that a Liberal government would invest in the middle class, that he would run three modest deficits, so it would increase spending and to grow the economy. And it would also raise taxes on the top 1% of income earners and lower them for the middle class in order to grow the economy and to provide a better life for many Canadians. Now, fast forward to today, and with Trudeau seeking re-election in the vote that's scheduled for October 21st, many Canadians will be asking those same questions that he asked 4 years ago, but this time they'll be asking them about him. Now, let's set aside the fact that Trudeau's, quote, three modest deficits has actually been $52 billion worth of spending shortfalls since Trudeau took power, even though the economy has had a solid run of growth. Let's instead focus on Trudeau's plan to raise taxes on the highest 1% and lower them for the middle class. As he said, after all, it's been Trudeau's go-to answer in the House of Commons to virtually every budget or economical question asked by the opposition. Now, a study by the Statistics Canada has shown that the incomes of Canada's top 1% grew at a faster pace than everyone else in 2017, and overall, they actually saw their taxes go down, despite what Trudeau had promised. Now, the average total income of all tax filers rose 2.5% to $48,400 compared to the previous year. Now, the average income growth of the bottom half of tax filers increased 2.4% to $17,200, but those in the top 1% saw an average income growth that year of 8.5% to $477,700. And the biggest surge in income growth was actually seen by those who made even more money. Tax filers in Canada's top 0.1%, who made at least $740,300 in 2017, took home 17.2% more income than in 2016, and people in the top 0.01%, who made $2.7 million or more, saw their incomes rise by 27.2%, which makes it actually the fourth biggest annual increase in the last 35 years. So it actually shows that the middle class tax cut that the government talks so much about was really going to the upper middle class, which was limiting how widely its effect was being felt. Now, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh says that the report will be unflattering to the government. He said, "I think the results are very clear," when he was talking about this to the Taiyi. He said, "After 3.5 years, Canadians don't feel that they're better off than they were before." He cited a January poll that found that 46% of Canadians said they were within $200 of being unable to pay their bills each month. And yesterday, a new poll bumped that up to 48%. And he said, quote, "That's a really staggering number, that half of Canadians are on the brink of going bankrupt. That's a scary feeling, and it shows to me clearly Canadians aren't better off than before." And he contrasted the strain on average families with the news that the government is granting $12 million to Loblaws, whose CEO and chair Galen Weston Jr. is worth $14 billion, all to provide energy-efficient coolers. And he said, quote, "It shows that the Liberal government has really helped the powerful and the wealthiest instead of people who need it, everyday families and small businesses." Now, in March, an Angus Reid Institute poll confirmed that relatively few people feel better off. Just 17% of Canadians felt that their standard of living increased, whereas twice as many, 34%, said that they were worse off than a year earlier. And more recently, the Bank of Canada officials have said that wage growth has fallen short of where it should be. In the last 4 months of 2018, wages barely budged, with the growth rate down to 1.3% for the year. Meanwhile, prices for everything from groceries to home and energy and costs have risen faster and faster, with Statistics Canada recording a year-over-year inflation rate of 2%. In December 2018, wages rose, but they failed to even keep pace with inflation, which everyone knows, if your wages go up but inflation goes up more, you're actually making less than before. So in the end, let's ask the same questions that Trudeau asked 4 years ago. Are you better off now than before Trudeau took power? Is our country better off? Do you have better job prospects, and do you have confidence that your kids have a brighter future? And if the answer is no to any of those, then Trudeau has broken his promises. And if the electorate doesn't see Trudeau's working for them, then he might be find himself trying to find better job prospects.
And, you know, we saw some evidence of this in the Conservatives' most recently released universal tax cut that we talked about last week on the podcast, and that will help all brackets of income tax filers rather than just those making in the upper middle class and beyond, as happened with the Trudeau tax cut. And, you know, this is data from Statistics Canada. Statistics Canada is an organization that the Trudeau government has lauded as doing valuable research and providing information to Canadians and information to governments. And when they are providing this information in cases we've looked at before, yeah, there's some questions about it. But when they're also providing this information and it's used to build policy all across the country, that's something that definitely should be paid attention to. And, you know, it's a bit of a wonder why Trudeau and company aren't paying attention to that and seeing exactly what we're outlining here. And, you know, I think this is also why we see the various campaign slogans that we've seen for the parties. Trudeau has, of course, chosen Choose Forward, whereas the Conservatives is It's Time for You to Get Ahead. And with that, I think that's something that will get into the minds of all voters, and they'll consider that just based on, you know, when they see on the news or they see in the media the various slogans or they see them in an ad, that'll, of course, work its way into it, into their vision for what is close to 5 or 6 weeks on the campaign trail.
Yeah, and that's something that is noted, is that Andrew Scheer was actually the first one to come out with a tax plan that actually benefits lower-income families and lower-income people in general, more so than the other leaders did. And he announced that $6 billion plan to gradually lower income taxes to 13.75% from 15% over several years for the lowest federal bracket, which actually applies to anyone who has to pay taxes and pay income taxes. And it should be noted that Trudeau didn't release his own plan until after Scheer had released his. So Trudeau promised to make the first 15,000 of income tax free for people making under 147,000 per year. But if he wanted to do that, why hasn't he done it already? If he was really working for the middle class isn't making over $147,000 per year. So why didn't he put that in instead? It's questions that we should be asking of the people in government.
Indeed. And, you know, we can also watch who the parties are looking at. And I think that with the debate coming in the next week or so, with the debates, plural, we'll definitely see that Trudeau will be looking more at what the NDP is doing, because this is a very core issue for the NDP. And that's where the NDP voter base in 2015 went to the Liberals. And they're wanting to get some of those back. So I don't think we've seen the true story of this race yet. And we'll talk about that in our next story with polling as well. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to talk about our Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/westerncontext. And that's where you can support the podcast monetarily if you want to. So for $2 a month, the price of a cup of coffee, you can help us remove bias and sensationalism from the news and media. For $5 a month, at the price of a sandwich, you can continue to help us do that, but you can have your name read out on the podcast if you want. And for $10 a month, you can become a Western Context insider and gain an insight into our work and gain pre-release access to our production and show notes throughout the entire week. And in case you're wondering what we'll be doing with this, we'll be doing a monthly news and review podcast every other month, where we reflect on the news of the month in a candid way and provide opinion on where affairs are headed next. And at $50 a month, you can expect online town halls hosted every quarter. Topics of discussion will include the news of the month, the state of the media, and your questions. We also do have an option to make a one-time contribution as well via PayPal, which you can find out more about, and the Patreon option at westerncontext.ca/support. All right, so moving into our next story. This one's about polls. And, you know, we see polls all the time during an election campaign, and this is something that many people pay attention to, the horse race, as it's called. But not all polls are created equal. And, you know, we categorize the polls on our website at westerncontext.ca/polls. There we are continuing what we did in the Alberta race, listing pretty much all the polls that are published during this campaign and giving them a rating of red, yellow, or green, depending on where they come in. And, you know, with that, the green polls have a good methodology, a good sample size, and it's been taken recent enough that they can still reflect the public mood. Yellow polls either have a less reliable methodology or were green and as time has passed and they're no longer current. Whereas red polls might have an invalid sample size, questionable origin, questionable methodology, or were just published too late to be of any use. And of course, polls that were originally green and yellow turn red over time and should no longer be considered current. And what you can do is head on over to westerncontext.ca and have a look at these polls. Currently, as of recording this, we have two green polls on this list based on what we feel is accurate and what is the current situation in the Canadian electoral landscape. And they're both from Abacus and Ledger. And this list will be updated throughout the entire week as we progress through the campaign. So there's also a section on this page about why polls can be wrong. And this is something that the media doesn't talk about enough. And the first and biggest reason is that the poll doesn't accurately sample the population. They might sample more males than females, more old than young, or maybe more of one region than another, when they should split it evenly across the country according to population distribution. Another is that the sample size is too small, which creates a big margin of error. And what this means is that you have a wider range of statistical probability for where that poll sits. Most of the polls we have on this list have a margin of error of about 2%, some 3%, give or take. And what that means is that if a party is listed at 33% of the vote, that means within the margin of error of that survey, their vote is somewhere between 30 and 36%. Now, also with this, when we look at polls, it could just be that the polls were sampled in a way that looks at various regional breakdowns. So the Lower Mainland of BC, the 905 area of Greater Toronto, the Island of Montreal, or Quebec City. These are all very different regions within the provinces of BC, Ontario, and Quebec, respectively. And with that, that also increases the margin of error. And that's also something that the media doesn't talk about much. And finally, the biggest reason, and perhaps the most common why polls are wrong, is that they're no longer valid. Maybe the firm waited too long to publish, or the population has moved. Now, with this, you know, we see polls all the time, and you're probably saying, okay, but the media is involved in this, and that is absolutely true. All polls, we, as in the public here, are contracted by the media. Polls that are leaked are contracted by either political parties or special interest groups, often unions or third-party advertising groups. This means that while the pollsters seek to carry out their polling in a scientific way, the media or the group that commissioned that poll will ultimately spin that poll in one way or another. And this is why you hear terms like dead heat, slim lead, neck and neck. And these are all terms that the media uses to describe polls, when in actuality with this, what this would better be referred to is calling the race a statistical tie, meaning that no one's ahead and there's really no way of knowing who is at what position in a given day when the race as it is right now statistically tied, as per the polls are reporting. And if we look at our current polls that we have on the list here right now, you'll see that the media often reports with decimals in terms of the surveys that they air on the television and whatnot. But when they report with decimals, that is effectively limited by the margin of error that we have on a poll, which right now is the lowest is 2%. So you have to ask, are these decimals really needed? And as an example here, Abacus doesn't report with decimals, nor does Ledger. But on the other hand, both Nanos and Main Street do report with decimals as well. And you can see all of these on the poll tracker at westerncontext.ca/polls. Now, also talking about what the media doesn't talk about is the various ways that polls can be carried out, or polling methodologies, as they're called. And one of the oldest ways of polling a population is a simple phone call. Someone is sitting on one end of the phone, their computer dials a phone number in a specific area, and a live person talks to someone and says, if an election were held tomorrow, who would you vote for? That's one way of doing it. Another is called interactive voice response, or a robocall, where you'll get a call and you'll effectively be asked who would you vote for, and you just say a specific option or press a number on your telephone keypad. That's IVR, interactive voice response. Then you have online polls, which are carried out exclusively online, and these ones are different based on whether you go from a randomized pool of people or if you just go from a general section of the population who happens to see or link to the poll. So online polls are a bit questionable in that. Then finally, you can mix. You can do a hybrid online, or you can do a hybrid phone and IVR, depending on what some of the polling firms out there do. Another thing that we need to actually have a chat about in this particular race is the idea of rolling averages. And what this means is that as a poll is carried out day by day or week by week, the polling firm will average their results together in order to produce a result of showing what exactly they feel might be happening in the electoral landscape. Two of the firms that are doing that this race are Nanos and Mainstream. And as a result of this, we've seen some pretty substantial shifts in the race. And that's likely caused by new groups being added into that statistical bunch of the survey, and or some being dropped. And we here at Western Context do question the rolling averages by just a bit. And that's why those polls from Nanos and Main Street start off as yellow, in that when Nanos does a poll, they're polling 1,200 people. But each day they're only adding 400 new people, and the 800 were from the previous day pulled together. So what that is doing is it's effectively averaging the results out over 3 days. And, you know, you could say that creates a more accurate result in some cases, that you're getting a wider picture of the population. But at the same time, you're also using a smaller data set, smaller number of people that you're adding onto that. And if there's any errors in the way that's modeled or the way that it's carried out, that could further compound the error by doing a rolling average as well. Now, let's talk about the big if. What if voters are shy, or they don't answer their phone because they don't know the number that's calling? Many people have caller ID in this day and age, and many people only answer their phone if they know exactly who is calling, or if they're expecting a phone call from a specific area code. And that's one reason why polls can be inaccurate, and what we want to watch out here for at Western Context. And what are we doing, and what would we say is the best way to look and see where this election is going? And quite honestly, that comes down to sentiment. How do people feel about the current administration? Do they deserve to be reelected? Do you approve of or disapprove of your government and its leaders? How do you feel about your financial situation and where you are today compared to where you were 4 years ago? People are more likely to say how they feel rather than how they will vote. And this is not only because voting is a private, intimate act, but an action we'll do in 3 weeks is only hypothetical, and it's hard to feel and categorize that feeling into a political party, one of four or five, depending on which region you're in. And because of that, it's a lot easier to just come forward with your feelings and tell someone how you're feeling rather than trying to determine which political party you fit into if you're not someone who follows politics very closely. And we saw this in the 2016 U.S. race. People were pessimistic about the economy and their own personal situation, but the polls, of course, all said that Hillary Clinton would win. The polls also underestimated the size of the UCP majority in Alberta this spring, and we saw a sentiment there that many people felt that the economy wasn't doing well, even though the government said and the survey said that the GDP was going up and the economy was growing, albeit slowly. And in the days leading up to that election, the highest the UCP polled at was 51%, while the lowest was 44%. And this created an average of 48%. Meanwhile, they got 55% of the vote come election day. We can, of course, maybe attribute this to oversampling of Edmonton and Calgary, or maybe an underestimation of the UCP vote in Calgary. But the point is that several pollsters did end up calling the race in Calgary effectively tied, and it was nothing close to a tie in Calgary. In fact, the UCP won all but three seats in Calgary. The pollsters and the media got off largely free from this because they got the outcome right, a UCP majority. But we can't deny that the polls were wrong, outside of the margin of error, both in underestimating the UCP and overestimating the NDP. So the point in this is that polling is a science, and everybody does it in their own interesting way. Polls should not be treated as gospel, and the media often reports them as if they are to be trusted and are the golden slice of bread. But in reality, polls are a snapshot in time, and most of the times by we see them, the sentiment will have changed. So be careful, be mindful, vote, and pay attention on election day. And if you want to see what polls you should actually look at and which ones should be considered valid on current day, check out our poll tracker at westerncontext.ca/polls.
Yeah, this is something that goes on and on in the media all the time. It happens every election cycle. Happens even when there isn't an election cycle. Happens, you know, month to month. And the media will be picking up on these polls, and they'll be using them to show how a particular party is doing or how a particular leader is doing. And it can happen as in on a federal level, and it can even happen on a provincial level as well. And certainly the media likes to pick up on these polls to fit their own narratives. So they'll pick up on a certain issue that's come out recently, and they'll pick up on a poll that's been taken in the last couple of days. They'll use this to show that that issue has either really affected that party or that that issue hasn't affected them whatsoever. And we saw this quite recently with the Trudeau blackface scandal, where a lot of polls were coming out that said that it seemed like people didn't care that much about it because the polls were not leading to a decline in Liberal support. And then other polls came out and said that they did lead to a decline in support. So then, you know, we're on the fence of the will they, won't they sort of scenario, because there's so many polls that often conflict with each other, and they don't actually provide a definitive answer as to what people are actually thinking.
Indeed, and you know, we talk about the color coding system, and that is definitely the best way to do it. I mean, green, good; yellow, caution; red, ignore. And you know, when it comes down to that, that's something that I think the media could do a better job of paying attention of. And we haven't even touched the topic of poll aggregation and seat projection, because from our perspective here, when you are averaging polls together, surveys of different sizes, surveys with different methodologies, what you're creating is an average, and you're distilling noise. And many of the polling aggregators out there do, of course, assign different coefficients or modifiers to the different polling firms based on past history of being correct or not. And, you know, that comes entirely down to whoever is doing that aggregation. And then you take that one step further from seat projections and you hear that liberals projected to get X seats, conservatives projected to get Y seats. That's just throws more confusion into the voter base and can be a catalyst for strategic voting, when in reality, at the end of the day, people should be deciding what they want to vote on based on what the parties have put forward, not some poll that likely isn't even correct.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And we're seeing lately with polls coming out and how the media is reporting on them, just the way that they report on scientific studies, which also study particular things in almost a vacuum, so to speak, in that they're taking a certain hypothesis and they're taking it under very specific conditions and they're testing that to see if it's true or not. So, and then after so long, it gets released to the public and the public picks up on this, the media picks up on it, and they decide to write on it with a snappy headline. And it actually takes out a lot of the science out of the title. So instead, you'll get you might have an experiment where people were testing the cancer rate growth in rats after having alcohol ingested, and then the media will pick up on this and it'll get distilled down to it, and eventually there will be a headline that says a glass of wine a day can help cure cancer. And it might not be completely right at all. It might even be the opposite of what the science was trying to say. And this is the exact same thing that the media does with polls, in that they try and distort the statistics and distort what the polls are saying to suit their own narratives. And we're seeing this a lot in both polls on whether the liberals are higher or whether the conservatives are higher, or how high the NDP and the Greens are, how close they are in the race for the third party status. And it's all just noise, and it's hard to actually make an opinion on it based on polls because they're so different. And I think that's why people have to be careful as to what they're looking at with polls, because oftentimes it's not only that they may not be correct, it's oftentimes that none of them are correct.
And we've seen that many times in the past. And, you know, this is just a cautionary tale that we like to provide every election race that we cover, because it's something that the media seemingly forgets. And it's such an obtuse topic that the way things get distorted down, that we do need to provide that brief explainer on that. So that's what this was. Anyways, what do we got for our BC story this week?
So this week in BC saw the release of an overview of the RCMP investigation into the Northern BC murder spree that took place in the summer. And with it, probably the biggest BC story of the summer is now closed. Now, the RCMP released the conclusions of the evidence and video footage recorded by Briar Schmelgowski and Cam McLeod, which were two teenagers from Port Alberni who admitted to the murders of a young tourist couple, Chinna Deese and Lucas Fowler, as well as UBC lecturer Leonard Dick. Now, the RCMP described the videos Friday as part of an overview of the investigation that led police on one of the largest manhunts in Canadian history this summer, as the two young men fled BC to the remote riverbank in northern Manitoba, where they died. Now, a digital camera found with their bodies held 6 videos and 3 still images. RCMP say that they're not releasing the videos or the images to the public, saying that they do not wish to give McLeod or Schmigelski further notoriety. RCMP Assistant Commissioner Kevin Hackett described the pair as, quote, cold and remorseless, and in the videos, and the report says that Schmigelski states that they are responsible for the 3 murders, and that they were planning on going to Hudson Bay, where they planned to hijack a boat and go to Europe or Africa. Now, the mayor of Port Alberni, where Schmigelski and McLeod lived and many family members continue to reside, also expressed gratitude to the police while expressing condolences to the victims' families. Mayor Shari Minion said that she hoped that the additional information answers some of the questions that so many people have had about this very sad case and hopes that the findings will bring closure for the victims' families, despite the fact there will never be a justified explanation for these senseless acts. Unfortunately, the videos did not provide a motive, only that the two had made a suicide pact. Hackett said, quote, "If there is in fact a motive, it's gone with the accused." The RCMP said that McLeod shot Smigelski before shooting himself, and the two guns that were found near their bodies were the same firearms used in the murders of Dees, Fowler, and Dick. Now, according to the police report, the two bought an SKS semi-automatic rifle at Cabela's Outfitter store in Nanaimo, BC on July 12th, which was the same day they left Port Alberni. Now, likely McLeod bought the gun as he was 19 and Smigelski was just 18 at the time. Now, the source of their other gun is unknown. The release of the RCMP report has led to criticism on social media that the killers were able to pass the RCMP gun test to get a PAL, otherwise known as the Possession and Acquisition License, to be able to purchase the gun. Now, the PAL training includes extensive safety training, security screening, and a formal application with supporting documents. Now, likely a lot of the talk about the guns is leaked from the federal election campaign, where Trudeau has pledged even tougher gun controls on legal firearms owners. And this is a story that we talked about last week. It seems that every time there's a tragedy, a certain segment of the population is always quick to turn the topic to gun control. And while this horrible story is unfortunate, the reaction should not be to focus on knee-jerk political responses.
And I think we can take that up to any time there is a major act like this in terms of whether it's a terrorist attack or these murders, that, you know, anybody who feels the need to go to a political response of any kind, and, you know, knee-jerk ones are particularly the worst, especially in an election campaign, needs to effectively look at what they are saying in terms of how they want to project dialogue here in Canada. Granted, yes, we are not the U.S., and we've talked many times before about how our gun problems in the large cities like Toronto do not mirror what is happening in the U.S. Not at all, not in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, at the end of this, I think the biggest thing that comes out of this is that during that entire time period in the summer, you talked about this, that pretty much anybody who was in rural BC or northern BC or even the Yukon at that time would have been definitely worried in terms of where these two were. And I think that the fact that we now know that it was a trek eastward across BC, Alberta, and Saskatchewan to Manitoba near Hudson Bay, where they were inevitably found in northern Manitoba, that should put a lot of people at rest. And, you know, it's always unfortunate in these cases where there isn't a motive to be found or an explanation behind this, and the suspects wind up dead, because, you know, there are three different families out there that might not get closure from this, hopefully, through the acts of the RCMP and the further information the RCMP was able to provide that we're not aware of. These families will be able to get closure from that, because at the end of the day, that's the thing that the media and everybody should remember when dealing with this case or talking about this case.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm hoping that the victims' families can get closure from this, and perhaps the RCMP was willing to give them more information on this to provide closure to them. I know that certainly a few of the families decided they didn't want to see the videos or see the images, because at the end of the day, it didn't really change much in their minds, is that their family members were still murdered. And that doesn't really change too much, but hopefully they were able to find closure through this. And I think that for people trying to take the knee-jerk response and go towards gun control and political issues on this, aren't actually looking at what happened itself. And in this particular case, it was a case where they were successfully able to get their PAL, and they were legally able to buy their gun because they were able to get a license, and they were able to successfully pass all of the stringent needs to actually get the license. And we see this all the time with people who own cars getting into accidents or getting into terrible accidents. They were able to pass the license to get their cars. So we see this all the time with things that are licensed, is that there's already stringent requirements on getting these licenses. So getting them even more so, putting even more further gun control is not going to solve the issue. What the issue is that these two were always going to do this, and that they were always going to go on this spree, and that they were always going to find ways to cause trouble. And whether they had guns or not that were provided legally, we don't even know if the second one was made or if it had passed down through family members or if they found it or stole it. We don't know. So there's nothing that we can actually go on the gun control issue on this story, because there's still further information that we don't know. So social media deciding to go to the knee-jerk response on this, it provides a cautionary tale.
Definitely. And, you know, this takes us nicely into our firing line segment talking about social media, because, you know, we saw one of the biggest political stories last week in all of Canadian history. But getting ahead of ourselves here, the firing line is a segment where we talk about a story that was completely missed by the media or was talked about in a completely wrong and inappropriate way. And this one is the latter in terms of what happened on social media, not legacy media. Now, what happened last week and what we talked about on our firing line last week, one of the biggest stories ever for a Canadian prime minister wearing blackface, not just once, but numerous times. And, you know, following that, this week a photo emerged online trying to normalize Trudeau's behavior by suggesting that Prime Minister Stephen Harper was indeed a racist for appearing in Indigenous garb. CBC had a story about this, effectively debunking what became a huge social media story earlier in the week. And, you know, social media and news, you combine those two together, you often get sensationalist stories that are misleading and plain wrong. And, you know, a simple Google search would have fixed this problem on this story. The photo floating around was captioned with "Stephen Harper is astounded at Trudeau's racist costume from 20 years ago." And the picture featured Stephen Harper in Indigenous garb back in 2011 when he was Prime Minister receiving an honorary naming ceremony in southern Alberta. But more on the exact circumstances on that in just a little bit. And, you know, there's one thing with this, though. It wasn't a costume. It was actually a ceremony naming him an honorary chief. So back in 2011, Harper was given the title of honorary chief by the Blood Tribe in southern Alberta. Elder Pete Standing Alone painted Harper's face and placed a headdress with eagle feathers on his head. And, you know, looking at this, it's considered a great honor in their culture. It's been bestowed on others before, including Prince Charles and Pope John Paul II. And Trudeau was even given an Aboriginal name by the Tsuut'ina First Nation back in 2016, where he was also presented with a headdress. Now, Robert Yago, a Montreal-based writer and member of the Kwantlen First Nation, said that the chiefs chose to put a headdress on Harper, and they brought in people from their faith, and they colored his face. It was all part of a cultural and religious ceremony. When you point to that, and you point to the color on his face, and you laugh at it, you're not laughing at Harper. You're laughing at the people that put the color there. People are partisans, and they don't really appreciate what the actual issue is, and they don't want to engage with it. So they'd rather deflect and say, everybody does this. And lo and behold, that's exactly what we saw following Trudeau's blackface story last week. We saw countless attempts in the media of this trying to be normalized. We saw headlines dumbing it down even today in the Toronto Star of all. They acquired the high-quality video of the video that was sent to Global, and their headline was that he was wearing a toucan shirt. It didn't have bananas on it. But the point, of course, was lost that Trudeau not only colored his face, he colored his arms, and he even colored his legs. You can actually see that now in the full high-quality video, and this is the media's attempt and social media's attempt to deflect it and not engage with it, normalize it, and say everybody does this. And that's the biggest continuation of that, is that, you know, we talked about last week in that story, is that Trudeau built this as a learning experience for everybody in Canada. But as we talked about, if you talk to most Canadians, most normal Canadians, they would say that using blackface or coloring your skin, as we saw Trudeau did numerous times, and colored all of his skin, not just his face, that's not acceptable. Social media ultimately has the power to reach thousands or millions of people, depending on who's putting out the tweets. But if done incorrectly, it creates more trouble than it's worth and can spread fake news really easily. Now, we're in an era where news appearing on social media can be indistinguishable from real news. And the action of sharing a story, all it takes is all it takes to perpetrate this fake news. It takes a couple of taps and away you go. You could send it out to 300 of your friends. Now, a quick Google search this week by anyone sharing this story would have found the original article. And for clarity's sake, that article is linked in our supplementals for this story, which you can find at westerncontext.ca. Now, in this case, we're lucky that the mainstream media didn't pick this up as a story, but the very fact that people were talking about it on Twitter shows the vastly different conversations that can happen online compared to the real world and how fake news can just spread so quickly online. And without all that information and context that we provide here at Western Context, it's very hard to know what is real in the news today.
Yeah, that's true, especially with all of the fake news going around on social media. It can be shared by friends who you otherwise think are trustworthy, but they might even be fooled into thinking it's a real news story when, in fact, it's completely fake and it might be created by someone who's just wanting to have a laugh, or it could be even more so, more insidiously, it could be created by someone who's actually trying to use that to further a goal, either to further one candidate over another, or they're trying to destabilize a certain conversation happening in our society. And certainly this is what seemed to happen this week, is that this photo that was circulating around and being shared on social media to try and garner outrage was almost meant to be a distraction from what we did see last week as one of the biggest stories in Canadian news ever, which, of course, was the Prime Minister wearing blackface not once, not twice, but at least three times. And that was something that was huge news and seemed to be swept under the rug very quickly by the mainstream media. Even though social media was still talking about it quite a bit, it seems that this almost parry into the Stephen Harper story was definitely quite interesting, and I would like to know where the origin to this story was, actually. But as is the case with social media, we'll likely never know that.
Indeed. And, you know, this is another reason we do this show, is just because there's so much noise. And, you know, we thoughtfully curate our stories. We, of course, look at all our stories and look at stories that are shared by reputable people. And, you know, in cases where things do appear too good to be true, we double and triple check sources. And that's why when you look at all of our supplementals, you see numerous of them for most stories that we do. It's just because we want to provide that full story. And, you know, that's something that the media should definitely do. And that's why this is our firing line this week. And in many cases, as we see on social media, this was a knee-jerk reaction to the Trudeau story of blackface last week. And that takes us nicely into our word of the week.
Yes, that's right. Our word of the week this week is knee-jerk, which is defined as reacting quickly or automatically without thought or due consideration. And I think that's something that happens. It came from quite literally the term where if you hit a particular part of your knee, your leg will actually kick and it'll do it automatically without you thinking about it. And oftentimes doctors use that when you're a kid to be able to test your reflexes or to see how sharp your brain is. And but oftentimes we'll see knee-jerk reactions a lot, especially surrounding an election campaign, but certainly surrounding any hot-button political issue where a lot of people rush to a certain conclusion without actually taking the time to look at the information and look at the context of a certain thing. And I think that's why this word is our word of the week this week.
Yeah, it's very apt. And, you know, this is something that we hope we can get through the rest of the campaign without from the media, in particular knee-jerk reactions, though. We do have a number of debates coming up, and I think that's highly unlikely that we won't have any knee-jerk reactions left in this campaign. So that's why it's a good word of the week and a good way to look at a number of our stories for this week as well. And, you know, as we said, full supplementals for all these stories available at westerncontext.ca, our full show notes there as well. You can also subscribe to the podcast on any podcast listener out there, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, pretty much anything under the sun. westerncontext.ca/subscribe. Just click on the one that you want. And we're also on Twitter and Facebook at Western Context, where you can find our episodes and stories that we share throughout the entire week. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of Western Context.
And as we go into October, as in the last month that we have before the federal election, we'll always make sure to look through all the stories that the mainstream media puts out and some that social media puts out, just to make sure that we can cut through all that bias and sensationalism that we always see in the mainstream media, whether it's print, radio, online, TV, you name it, we've got it. And we'll always make sure to provide you with the context needed to put yourselves on the right side of the news. So with that said, we'll see you next week for another episode of Western Context.